Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
This is RTE Radio 1. Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one, and of course here on RTE Radio 1 on Sunday nights. Tonight's play is Fragile Melissa by Charlie McGuinness. Fragile and Melissa are locked in grief. Fragile struggles to come to terms with the death of his friend, while Melissa wants revenge on the man he holds responsible for the loss of his son. Listeners are advised that the play contains strong adult language that some may find offensive. Starring Mourish Crowley and Eamon Hunt, this is Fragile Melissa by Charlie McGuinness.
A shoebox. What is it? Keeper of things, secret things, special things, thoughts, memories. My first Valentine's card. I think of Siobhan Brady and myself behind the school shed shifting. Boom. An under-14 championship medal. I think of Fintan Lawler trying to batter me all by with a sideline flag. A one-way ticket to Greece. Dennis. Naxos. Oh, the crack. Myself and the boys from college, Dennis and Petty. They were mates from home that came to college together, the two sheep farmers. Dennis was just wild. Loved hurling, fishing with his dad, Melissa, and having the crack. He was always making up silly rhymes. The one that was on the go when I met him first was, hickle-lickle-lickle, I've got 40 sheep to tickle-lickle-lickle. I hate farming. I'd rather be working on a woman's titties in a place you get beat up by barman. Paddy was quieter. Long face. Loved hurling and Guinness and the occasional doobie. In the bookies during the day, out in the town at night, it was like they adopted me into their world. Night out, into Derwent's, pot noodle to line the stomach and a bottle of bucky, over the bridge and the 16 into town. Always the three of us. Tramco, the church, Whelan's, Reds, Boomerangs and, of course, coppers. Dennis didn't give a shit, but Paddy no more than myself wrote anything that moved. But we had standards. I really want to ride a fat one, he says. There, Rachel McGlone, she's massive, ride her. And he would. Well, when he was late.
My sanctuary light, that's all that remains. My sanctuary light in my place of sanctuary. My caravan. Oh, a snug spot. Imagine, in the back garden of my humble abode. Yes, a house I can no longer live in. On land I can never leave. Medicinal. Great word that. Not sure what it means, but whiskey. Medicinal purposes, definitely. It's killing me and curing me at the same time. The baptismal candle, the quencher of original sin. The cleansing introduction to your faith. Faith. Original sin. What is it? Knowing too much or too little or something. That's original sin. Well, fuck original sin and the horse it rode in on. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu. Not too bad now. Oh, learned from the best. Our fathers, the Jesuits. Give them a child, they say, for 7 years, you take him back a man. And they'll have you for life. Well, the bastards had me for 14 years, so I guess they have me for this one and the next. Sure, I was doomed from the start, being blessed with the name Melissa, servant of Jesus. And you know, I try to meet them, try to close them out. But life throws abuse at you, and you come crawling back. Oh, please, please, please forgive me. I'm sorry. Explain to me why this, why that. Pathetic. But they taught me well. Fear, doubt, self-hatred, guilt, and Latin. Hic est filius meus delectus inco mihi complaci. This is my son, with whom I am well pleased. Oh, I try to beat them, but those foreign words are embedded in my thick skull, and the more I try to get rid of them, the more power they get. We had a few of these the night before he left. Yeah, a few balls of malt before his voyage. Mea culpa. A ball of malt and my son's company. That's all I ever needed. Nothing said. Fishing together. Silence. Just the singing of the birds and the lapping of the water. Oh, but we talked too. That particular night, he was telling me about one of his friends from college. Fragile, that's what they called him. This poor old devil, his ex-girlfriend had had a miscarriage and he didn't know what to do. And in fairness to Dennis, he wasn't looking for any answers. He just wanted to talk to someone about it. As he said, he didn't want to talk to anyone in college in case it got back to this poor old crater. That was the type of him now. He was a bit mad, but he was as thoughtful, no, like that. And we were just chatting about women, and then, of course, love. When, inevitably, you might say, we got talking about his mother and how he met her. And seeing as the night that was in it, I indulged in his wishes and told him the story of when we first met. Dennis, your mother is ahead the ball. Don't ever forget that, but a good one. She has a weird smile. Like, it looks more like a frown, you know? But I know by her eyes when she's smiling. The first time we met, son, was a sweet July day in the ballroom of romance. I know, the ballroom of romance.
There was a 21st of one of the lads from college one weekend down the country, and when Dennis arrived at the party, I swear to God, his present. He said he had no money, so he brought a ram. And where did he have the ram? In a trailer? No, but tied to the passenger seat. He drove it down to the party. Lunatic. He was wild as fuck, and fair enough, sometimes it upset a few people, but there was a goodness in him. Later the same night, Paddy, Dennis and myself ended up out in the garden just as the sun was coming up and smoking a doobie. Dennis, talking of his dad's farm and not really wanting to take it on. Maybe he did. He didn't know. But I was asking him about Deirdre, this bird I'd been waiting, that he knew. She'd come to me and said that she had had a miscarriage the month before and that it was mine. When Paddy was gone, Dennis said, "Are you all right? I know her fairly well. I could talk to her. I'll suss it out." "Yeah. Cheers, Dennis. I'm just worried, you know." He was mad, but he was decent and I trusted him. I don't know what he said, but when I met her again, she said she was talking to Dennis, gave me a hug, and we chatted for ages. We didn't get back together, but got through this thing we needed to get through. Funny, Dennis didn't mention it again. He didn't go looking for credit, and I knew he hadn't told anyone. You know, you just know. Anyway, Easter time, and I was planning to get the fuck out of Dodge for the summer. My cousin told me about island hopping. Cheap booze, cheap food, cheap rent, cheap sex, or even better, free sex. And I wanted the lads to go. But Dennis had promised his dad he would stay at home and work the farm with him. And he was humming and hawing over it. So one day in the bookies, we bet on it. Boom. They were in. I got us a two-bedroom apartment a stone's throw away from the Venetian castle on the island of Naxos, the nuptial isle of Dionysus. We booked to leave on the 15th of June, all bound for the Greek islands. See ya when I'm looking at ya. Boom!
I was sitting here thinking about some old time. So, in the door of the ballroom of romance I go. Ray Price was going on about this dub lassie that was down with one of the real girls and who, according to him, had a gamey look about her. A grand night till Big Tom decided to have a lady's choice. A dreaded moment. I used to always kind of hang around the jacks, you know, in case my self-esteem dropped below anything less than telling myself I was Ireland's answer to Jimmy Dean. When I got this kind of nudge on the side, I looked over and she gave me what I know now to be her smile, but at the time I didn't know, so I thought she was giving me a dirty look. And with the confusion and panic and the dirty look, I just nudged her back. But sure, with the adrenaline of the whole situation, I nearly knocked her over. She looked at me in a kind of shock horror of amusement and just said, "Do you want to dance or what, you culchy?" I thought, oh, fuck, it's the dub. But sure, by the time I even realised it, I was out on the dance floor, her hand fixed on me arse, and I'm panicking, thinking, "I hope the parish priest isn't looking, because he'll surely tell me mother." And she says, "Do you know a fella called Ray Price?" I said, "Yeah, you know, kind of being cool." She says, "He's a bollocks. Been trying it on with me all night. That's the only reason I'm dancing with you now." So I was, "Yeah, Ray, he's a big bollocks. And him, one of my best friends." Me head was saying, you're way out of your depth here, boy. Get the fuck away from this one, quick. But, of course I didn't. You never do. Do you, son? And I wish I had left it at that. But tonight your memory's awful strong on my mind, and I would like to see you again.
Before leaving, I had 3 weeks working as a porter in the hospital so I wouldn't have to work over there. And one of the days I had to go down to the mortuary, which I hated to say the least, but this day, a corpse laid out in a coffin took my eye. He must have been 80 or more. He had been embalmed earlier and it just looked like he was lying there, just waiting to be reunited with old friends. And I didn't mind. I just ended up sitting in the mortuary beside this man, looking at this corpse and thinking, he's content. White silk surrounding his friendly face. He was passing the test of happiness and he was strolling into the next life more than content. And I hated being down at the mortuary, but for some reason I just felt at ease in his company. Just looking at him. When I got this urge to touch him, and I put my hand on his forehead and moved my hand around till I was touching his cheek. He was cold, but I got this warm emotion. I don't know why. I wanted to feel what he had and maybe he could pass it on to me. And I enjoyed that moment, being there with a contempted corpse. Weird, I know.
The excitement on the flight was ridiculous. 19, away from home on our own. The only bit of advice the cousin had given was don't go swimming drunk. So what do? Met a crowd of local birds and went skinny dipping. Boom! We couldn't help ourselves. The freedom of the situation got too much for us. This was an expression of independence. From what we didn't know, we didn't care, but it set the tone. High octane crack was the soup of the day, every day. Night out, down Della Rocca Street, past the Venetian Castle, onto Lufnaxo to Club Paradiso. Every night, one of those perfect nights, all dancing. That sense of elation at that age, it's special. And Dennis, in the thick of it, like this magnetic ball of crack. It was just fucking wild, you know? And we smoked a bit of doobie. Why not? There's definitely something in the DNA at that age. It's like no matter what you do, there is no way you're going to die. It's not even a thought. As you are bulletproof, made of elastic. If I fall, I will bounce. Invincible. That morning, I woke up sweating my bollocks off. Boys asleep. So I got up and I walked aimlessly until I got to the beach, where I couldn't walk any further, but just into myself and a sense of calm and happiness I had. When I got back, the boys were already on it. And we went hell for leather at it that night.
You have a head on you, like a smacked arse, says Ray Price. We may head up to Dublin to see if we can get a hold of this one. It was September, and I hadn't seen your mother since the dance. So up we go to the television club. In the door, and I hear Rod Stewart. Do you think I'm sexy? And the first person I see is your mother, sitting, legs crossed, in a kind of a stripy blue number. Hair up this time, in a kind of a beehive job, but the same funny smile. And I'm thinking, this is it, Marisa. It's now or never. So, over I go, casual like. Shut up, Rod, you bollocks. And we talked. When all of a sudden, we're standing for the national anthem. Before I could say anything, she says, will you walk me home? Perfect. When we get in the door of this tenement house, there's a man sitting beside the stove, drunk, and I hear a woman crying in the small room off it. Patsy goes running to her, and she's saying, ma'am, are you all right? Then she starts crying at this fella. You did it again. You did it again. Get out of this house. Then he hits Patsy, and I see this, and I lose it. Get the fuck away from her, I say. And I grab this man, and I throw him out the door. Get the fuck away from her. I'll fucking flay you. Get the fuck away from her, you cowardly cunt. Dennis, I didn't even know who he was. But I just knew he had hit your mother. And I knew that that couldn't happen, Dennis, because I knew that this was the woman I was going to bring home and marry and rear a family with and work the land. I knew she was the woman for me, Dennis. Just like I know you are the man to keep this land and this family. The child is father to the man. As I spoke, I saw something in him change. I saw a sadness. I suppose I always knew was there, but never wanted to see. I had said too much, or not enough. You see, I don't really know.
We were bananas. I left with Paddy, but by the time I got to Club Paradiso, I realised I was alone. And then I was going back up Del Roque Street and this light snapped me from this kind place my soul was. The ambulance light and police and people there. But it was like I knew already what had happened. A policewoman came towards me, but by the time she got to me, I was sober. And she says, Dennis, your friend, he is dead. I lay against the wall and sat on the warm pavement and I didn't really know what I felt. I just sat. No emotion. Just dumb. I think I saw him through the crowd. But then maybe that's an image I've placed in my head. But in my mind, it just seems that there was a moment that all the crowd parted just for me to see. To see what I had done. I mean, I was there that night getting drunk and smoking our brains out. We were all platic. I remember leaving the apartment thinking, maybe he isn't in a good place. Maybe that's hindsight, but what if it's not? And then, Paddy's voice asking, where is he? No answer. What? Where is he? No answer. I'm gonna get him. I run. Dennis, body gone. Paddy shouting, I'm gonna get him. What happened? What happened? Window smash. What happened? Me shouting. He fell. He fell. Door crash. Well, I'm gonna get him. He's gone. Patty kicking. Foot the door. Door smash. Glass smash. Police grab. Get the fuck off me. Police crash. Head smash. He's gone. Patty screaming. More police. Paddy screaming, and I'm gonna fall. I want to fall. Paddy on the floor screaming. I want to fucking fall. People looking. Me explaining. Paddy putting car. Paddy screaming.
I want to fucking fall. Me explaining. Car moving. Petty gone. People looking. Me. Just standing. Lost.
I cried soft, sitting at the kitchen table. When Patsy was off the phone, she didn't need to tell me. I already knew what had happened. I walked out of the kitchen and into the scullery, holding a tea towel in my hand, and stared out onto the land. I knew she was looking at me. I didn't want her to see, so I closed the door. I stared at my land, and the land slowly turned into my face. I studied my face, my mouth, my nose, my eyes, and then a face inside my face, my father's. And then I found my son's face staring back at me. He smiled and then laughed at me until I couldn't look anymore. I go back into the kitchen, and the first words I say to my wife, after hearing of our son's death, ring Mickey the Pot and tell him I won't need him for the mart. Me really thinking how Dennis should have been here to help me. But Jesus, such a thing to say. And Patsy, being the woman she is, stood behind me and put her hand on my shoulder and whispered, "All right, my Lisa, I'll go and pack a few things." I really wanted to say all those things you're meant to say, but I'm just not built like that.
That night I slept on my own in the living room floor, like a lost sheep. The police brought me to the station the next morning to give a statement where I met Paddy. Then we rang our parents, our real age shining through. Still kids. We met his parents the next day, Patsy and Willisa. I couldn't look the father in the eye. I just felt inadequate. Cause of the problem or something.
I felt scared when we landed. Scared of the change, of the people, of the place. I couldn't understand his need to come to this godforsaken country in the first place. And scared, of course, of what I was about to see. We met the boys first. Paddy, I knew. This fragile character, I didn't. He was all quiet and cool. "Well, you must be fragile." He couldn't even lift his head and look me in the eye. And an old watery handshake.
"Yeah. I'm sorry."
"For what?"
"Your trouble." He put a cold look through me. I didn't know what to say. I had already started getting this feeling of guilt swell inside me. How was the flight?"
"Grand." "Stupid fucking question. A stupid fucking grin. That was about all he could give me. Pathetic. Paddy talked to us. But he was already starting to wonder, why is it this other lad said so little?
Paddy did the talking. I kept stum. And the parents brought us to the mortuary. Dennis's body was in a small room, so I went in with Paddy. Then it all became too real. Dennis was dead. I just wanted to get sick, and maybe if I got everything out from inside me, maybe that would bring him back. I didn't cry. My body wasn't capable of tears, even if I wanted to. The coffin was in a glass case, just to emphasize the distance between Dennis and us, to show that he was in a different place now. And I started to think of friendly face in the mortuary at home. Here I was again, but no sense of contentment here. Dennis just wasn't here anymore. Who was his soul going to meet? He had more to do in this life. All of a sudden, we were going home. I remember meeting my parents, just seeing them, thinking maybe they could make it all go away.
I remember getting Dennis's luggage. I held his hurl tight to my chest, held it. It was part of him, and now part of me. I didn't believe it. My son would not do this. He had the land to come home to. The land. His body arrived about an hour after we got back from the airport. Just enough time to clear the sitting room. I sat with him that night, my son, and I looked at him, and regret comes back. The thoughts of those dear dead days and things you could have said. Hic est filius meus delectus in cum mihi complaci. This is my son, with whom I am well pleased to let him know. I wanted to be close to him again, to say sorry for those things I never said. Looking at him, it almost felt like he was a baby again. And you get filled with that horrible love that almost makes you want to squeeze him so tight. I wanted to lift him out, hold him in my arms and cradle him to sleep. I wanted to have a moment of closeness. One last time. So I just lifted his head up, and I kissed him on the lips, because that was the only way I was going to feel close to him. I wanted to kiss or touch his spirit one last time, to be close. And funny enough, it was the only comfort I got over that few desperate days.
At the wake, I didn't like meeting his friends from home because the guilt swelled again. I was in the kitchen, looking at pictures of him and his dad. found myself standing beside him. The guilt swelling all the time.
Him standing there, feeling sorry for himself. I tried avoiding him, but something inside me drew me there. To find the real story.
He looked at me and said nothing.
A cruel, nervous energy made me resort to shy talk. Jesus, did you get taller? You look horrid tall.
And I was thinking, what do I say to that? So I said, no, I got a haircut.
Oh, that's it. That's right. I felt stupid. And we stood there through another dumb silence.
Until I just walked away. Empty, like, not knowing what to do. At the burial, I found myself at the wall of the graveyard, on my own. I couldn't even see where the grave was. Like I didn't need or want to see any more. I had seen enough. All I had were the words of the priest. But I knew Dennis wasn't at rest or in a place of peace, no matter how many times the priest said it. Let us commend Dennis to the mercy of God, and therefore commit his body to the ground.
Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life. May he rest in peace. Amen. They were the only words or things I remember. My son being lowered into the ground was when I was sobered. Life became, well, not what it used to be. Patsy went back to our faith and found solace. That, unfortunately, I couldn't do. Ego autem dirigite inimicos vestros. Love your enemies, do good to them whom you hate, and pray for those who persecute you. But it's easier to hate, isn't it?
Life became, well, not what it used to be. Heading out, everyone having the crack, and then I would arrive. I felt like I made time slow down and that people were looking at me, smiling, but inside thinking, that poor bastard. I'm pretending I'm in great form. Yeah, he's in a good place. Another bullshit thoughts you have when you're stoned, but deep down I felt horribly guilty. All summer I wanted to go back to talk to the family, especially the father, and explain to him that maybe he is in a good place. But then that terrible notion of maybe that's just it. But you've got to believe in something. I wanted to believe in Zacchaeus and the healed lepers and the loaves and the fishes and Noah's portable zoo. There's got to be something more than just us, right? I wanted to believe, so then I could go to his family and say, he is with God now.
With no faith in me, the only thing that kept me going was this dream I kept having.
Oh,
I was in a room wallpapered with eyes.
The room full of people. And we were all looking to one person in the middle of the room. The only recognizable person.
Me.
Everyone else in the room was faceless, including me.
They were just dark clouds of nothing where their face should be.
We could float around the room and talk to each other and say what we liked about him.
But when they all talked, it just sounded like a murmur.
I got this excited feeling. This is my chance. Get there, bastard, now, because nobody can recognize you. And through the crowds, I went up to him.
I was panicking, turning, looking around because I knew someone was after me.
He knew he had to pay for what he had done. And the closer I got, the more he panicked.
I'm screaming, stop, stop!
I wasn't going to stop. I wasn't going to stop till I had justice. I got right in front of him.
This faceless figure caught me by the throat.
I told him, now you are going to pay your dues.
Who are you? Who are you?
I am your guilt, here to get justice. And I choked him till every ounce of life was taken from him. I am your guilt. I am all your guilt. One night I woke up. I had Patsy by the throat. I had done something. And as good as that woman is, my flaws were killing us too. But still, I wished for that dream to be true, make it a reality. And that Christmas, I got my chance.
I needed to see the parents. So at Christmas I went down. But as much as I wanted to go to the house, I found myself at the graveyard. It was easier. I stood and said a prayer. And then I knelt in front of his grave and I said, I'm sorry for bringing you to Greece. Sorry for that night. I'm sorry that if you hadn't met me, maybe you would still be alive. Saying all this to Dennis kind of gave me the strength I needed to go back to the house. So I did.
I was delighted to see him. Christmas had come early, and I was ready for that bastard. Well, Patsy said a prayer meeting.
Alone with him. That's the last thing I wanted.
Come out to the caravan.
I didn't ask why the caravan. I just followed.
Sit down.
Right.
Do you want a drink?
Yes, please.
Here.
Do you have any coke?
Coke? Nancy. No, I don't.
All right. This is fine. I was shitting myself and didn't know what to say.
I wanted to ask him, but I couldn't. I didn't know how, but I needed the truth. And that dream floating through me head, make the dream a reality.
The radio was on. Some program talking about Irish poets.
We ended up listening to the radio. Something in me was avoiding doing it.
Oh, you are not lying in the wet clay. For is it a harvest evening now, and we are piling up the ricks against the moonlight, and you smile up at us eternally.
When these lines were read out, this man started, not crying, but tears rolled from his eyes. The words gave him something. I mean, to me it didn't mean anything, but to him it was like they were soothing his grief.
I started crying as it hit me. Maybe it was the land. Maybe it was the land killed him. That sadness I saw in him the night before he left. Maybe he didn't want what I had planned. Then I asked, what kind of fuckery were you up to?
Fuckery?
Yes. Fuckery.
We were drinking. We were all drinking.
Drugs.
What?
Drugs. Cocaine, ecstasy. I'm not fucking stupid, you know.
No.
No.
We smoked a bit.
Of what?
Weed. Cannabis.
That was it?
Yeah. We were drunk and stoned.
Drunk and stoned, huh?
Yes. Look, I'm sorry.
Sorry for what?
Well,
that you got him drunk and fucking stoned, and only for you he wouldn't have touched that shit.
And he wouldn't know anything about drinking with a father like you. The state of you out here in your fucking caravan, hiding away from the world, drinking yourself into the ground.
You do not talk to me like that. So what happened?
We were gone. And Dennis was there on his own.
And how was he when you left him?
What?
How was he when you left him?
Well, Paddy went first. And I was about to follow and I went back in to see him and he was out of it. We all were. He was walking around the living room just saying the silly rhyme.
What was the rhyme?
He was always making up rhymes. It was silly.
I know, but what was the rhyme?
It was just the land, the father, the child to a man. Get out, you cowardly cunt.
Get out, you cowardly cunt. Hearing this, my worst fears became real.
But then he asked,
are you sure there was nothing he was scared of or running away from?
No. I don't think so. He fell.
You shouldn't have left him.
I know. I know I shouldn't have left him. I'm sorry.
I know. I know.
My Lisa died last month. Heart attack. Patsy found him in the caravan with a baptismal candle clutched to his chest. Now they are side by side. He is where he wants to be. Dennis. And my Lisa Lynch. Funny. Both memorial cards have the same thing written on them. Words that will either heal or haunt me.
Our lives are shaped as much by those who leave as by those who stay. Thank you.
We've been listening to Fragile Melissa by Charlie McGuinness. Melissa was played by Eamon Hunt and Moorish Crowley was Fragile. The music we heard was Orbit, composed by Philip Glass, and The Nature of Daylight by Max Richter. You Must Not Do This and Silver Linings were sourced at Hendiamp Studios. Sto Periali, which translates as The Hidden Seashore, was by Mikis Theodorikis. All the music was performed on cello and piano by Jane Hughes. I Would Like to See You Again, written by Charlie Craig and Larry T. Atwood, was performed by Big Tom and the Travellers. And Patrick Kavanagh's reading of his poem, In Memory of My Mother, is an RTE Radio Archive recording from 1963. Sound design was by Kieran Cullen. Fragile Melissa by Charlie McGuinness was directed by Goretti Slaven. And if you or anyone you know is affected by the issues raised in the play, you can find help and support at rte.ie/helplines. And to listen back to this or any of our plays, go to the Drama on One website. Next week's Drama on One is Truth, Love or Promise by Nuala McKeever. The series producer of Drama on One is Kevin Reynolds.
Drama on One.
A lie told often enough becomes the truth.
Drama on One, Sundays at 8 p.m.
Compassion is the basis of morality.
The tongue, like a sharp knife, kills without drawing blood.
Drama on One.
I'm Stanley Townsend.
I'm Angeline Ball.
I'm Stephen Ray.
Hi, I'm Saoirse Ronan.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Kinlan.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.